This is Rackabix After Hours.
Day to you, and thank you for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours, your favourite, I hope, music and technology podcast. My name's Ben. You're hearing my voice. Pete will be here shortly, because we must first say what number episode it was, because I've forgotten if I did that.
It's 144.
Brilliant. But Pete, what have you been doing this past seven-ish days?
Right, I'm really going to be showing my age now. I'm getting excited about a new product that I've purchased.
Is it a synthesizer?
No.
You bought something other than a synthesizer?
Yes, and it's not even musical in any shape or form. Anyway, in the endeavor to save energy and keep warm at the same time, I have purchased myself one of these electric throws.
For all you reptiles everywhere, you can keep warm on the sofa.
Exactly. So instead of having to put the heating on until the last minute, which will be, I don't know, close to Christmas, I will be hiding under my new electric throw when I watch the big screen.
Ooh, I know what you'd need. You know, for air compressors, you can have those retractable hose things and you could sort of mount them on the ceiling so you can get an air hose to anywhere in your shop for air-powered tools and such.
I know the sort of thing.
Yeah, you should have an extension cord of those somewhere centrally in your house so you never have to take your portable throw off. And you can walk around
re-plugging it.
Yeah. Or you wouldn't have to plug it in. Your tail would just follow you everywhere.
Or I need a battery-powered throw.
Yeah.
That can be charged by induction.
With a little bum bag or something.
Yeah, little strapper, little utility belt of batteries that keep it going.
So you never leave your throw.
No, I'm going to be able to come into the lounge and lay on the sofa and sort of warm myself.
Yeah.
And it's going to give me the ability to sit there and digest things like the new Star Wars series, the Anchor, that I've been watching.
What's that?
It's a prequel to...
Because I don't follow these, but obviously Mandalorian, huge, everyone loves it. Then didn't they have Kenobi as well?
Yes.
And this is another one.
Yeah, this one's called Anchor, and it's a prequel to Rogue One.
Oh, cool. I did like Rogue One.
And it's got the same, or some of the same characters from Rogue One in it. I haven't got that far in. I'm just finished episode one so far, but when I come here I find myself shivering because it's so cold.
Yeah, leather sofas aren't always the coziest until you've warmed them up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, I'm going to go into hibernation mode.
Need a cave next.
Yep.
Oh no, that's just your studio, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. I've already got one of those. Yeah. One of those man caves.
Any more from the week?
That's been the sum and total of my week, just waiting by the door, you know, with my intense delivery anxiety, waiting for my electric throw to turn up, which it did this morning.
Awesome. Well, you've also been an amazing pair of eyeballs in the shop, and you've spied me an Aston Halo. You magical man. The perfect reflection filter for my vocal recording setup. So thank you very muchly for that.
Yeah, I was quite pleased with spotting that before it disappeared.
Yes, and minty fresh, just a speck of dust, and who cares about that? Lovely.
We have had them in before, but they're quite a strange thing to part exchange in.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's a scenario where you need one, and then I'm trying to imagine the scenario where you need one and suddenly you don't need it anymore.
Yeah, and most people seem to be of the opinion that apart from exotic solutions that we don't know of, commercially available reflection filters, that's kind of the knees of the bee.
Exactly.
Yes. So, more from my week. Quite a lot of things. Where do I start? I went to my parents this weekend, and the main mission was to finish scanning all of my photios, which is done, I think. Yeah, I think I have scanned negatives for all of my miscellaneous bits and pieces now. So all that remains is to sit in front of Photoshop for a very long time and process them all. So, thanks to my father man's photography nerdery, he does have a rather swish camera. He's a Nikon or a Nikon man, not a Canon person like you, Pete. And he had a D810, full frame, high end, as I don't know much about them, but he has a very nice piece of macro glass, also from Nikon, and they looked delicious. Actually, I can show you some of these.
Okay, so what sort of situation is this? You've got the camera mounted possibly facing down or facing towards a light source, and you're putting these negatives up against the light source.
Exactly. Top down, vertically. Yeah, so my little light table thing that I got from Lomography, which I mentioned a good number of episodes ago now. Yes, just use that, and it worked way better than borrowing my partner's Canon 500D and really quite awful lens. So, one of my favourites was from RHS Wisley. There is a... I don't know, it might be part of kind of the research area, which also has a cafe under it. It's kind of at the back. Not many people go there, but it's got some pleasing geometrical shapes. But on Portra 400, and this time the colours work, and there's much more resolution to actually get a decent image. But I'm pleased with this one.
So what process are you doing to reverse it? As it's a negative you're scanning, how are you making it a positive, so to speak?
So straight into Photoshop. Via Camera Raw. I don't really know what I'm doing with Camera Raw, so I just go press the neutral button for the kind of, you know, it has those preset look and feel kind of squares.
Yep.
Just go for the neutral one. Then it is this method that I found on a YouTube video that I don't remember where it was from, where you grab a curves adjustment layer. This is still before you've inverted it. You do the individual channels, R, G, and B, and you kind of scoop your shadows and highlights handle. You scoop those until that channel starts clipping, and then just move it just a little bit the other way. Do that for your highlights and shadows on all three channels. Then you invert it, and it looks really kind of clean and natural. And then you can start doing your saturation, contrast, color balance, whatever else you want to do. Other methods don't seem to work very well for some reason. And it's still the same as last time we talked about film scanning. I don't know what I'm doing. So
well, it seems to be working out well in respect to the results that you've shown me.
Yeah, I'm happy with how it works. It is a smidge tedious because there's quite a few steps per picture, but it's all right.
I'm surprised there's not a function within Photoshop or Lightroom or a plugin or a filter or something that will just do it all for you.
There's certainly a Lightroom plugin of immense popularity called Negative Lab Pro, but I don't want to throw the cash at it and having to have Lightroom as well. So I'll go with the free and labor intensive option for now.
Fair enough. How much is that app, if it's not a rude question?
$99. So it's not that bad, but I still don't want to chuck $99 at it.
Fair enough.
It does have lots of presets for film stocks that everybody knows, so it would be a much quicker way of doing things, and you can probably batch process stuff one day. So that was one mission. The other mission was to scout a route that I had planned for my mother's commute. She has a rather fancy new e-bike from Ribble, and she wants to do, I think it's somewhere between 13 and 15 miles once or twice a week when it's dry to where she works. And I thought, I know things about making routes and stuff. I'll help out. There's a one big road, national speed limit, only two lanes, which attracts speeders, and it's, you know, it's not somewhere you really want to be cycling. So the mission was, let's avoid this at all costs. And took some back roads. I planned it with a few off-road segments, which claimed to be paths, so would have been fine on its kind of a hybrid bike. Should have been fine. Wasn't fine. I mean, it was just me on my own, so it was, I don't mind cycling up a incredibly steep, muddy and slippery bridle way. But yes, I need a second go to try and sort out that route. It was interesting going through the Cotswold countryside, where I'm convinced no human has set foot for the last 10 years or something. Round two, we'll see how that goes. Ooh, and we did take the bike out for a maiden voyage. I don't think she's properly ridden an e-bike in anger before. So I said, you know, put it on turbo mode. And we did a really small loop, which did have a relatively steep hill in it. And I really struggled to keep up. And she was just cruising along.
What type of motor is it? Is it a hub motor or a crank motor?
It's a rear hub.
Okay.
And integrated battery in the down tube type situation. So it's not your super powerful performance thing. It's really that endurance, really simple, make it easy type thing. But it's a good brand.
Yeah, I'm looking at the ones with the crank motors.
I think they're much more responsive in applying their power smoothly to how you're pedaling. I think it takes a little bit for the hubs to kind of kick in.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be the case.
Yeah.
But you can get, and there's quite a variety of hub motors as well. Mm-hmm. There's ones that are more, you might say, endurance, and there's more ones that are more sporty.
Yeah, this one had a reassuringly German name, packaging and instruction manual, so I'm quite confident in its durability.
But these things aren't cheap. There's another quite a
no
pricey purchase.
Yeah, I don't know how much it was, but it's certainly considerably more expensive than my bike.
Yes, that's what I've been seeing. And there's been quite a lot of inflation with push bikes, cycles.
Yeah, and this one was really delayed because the usual supply chain stuff. So I think it might be £300 or £400 more expensive if you bought one now. But of course, they ordered it ages ago.
Yeah, so they got it at that price, yeah. The pandemic certainly put a premium on cycles. Everybody wanted to be out exercising and
absolutely
so forth. So the prices went up, and they have not come down.
Mm-hmm. I was quite pleased as well. Lots of manufacturers, to keep costs down, will put not kind of off-brand, but certainly cheaper parts on for certain bits of the drivetrain and things. So on my bike, for instance, it was a Shimano rear derailleur, front derailleur and shifters, and then all the rest were just, you know, the cassette and the cranks, and that was all FSA, full speed ahead, which is heavy and heavy, apparently, according to the people on the internet. It certainly was heavy. But yeah, on this fancy e-bike, it was SRAM everywhere, really nice hydraulic brakes, you know, premium stuff.
Yeah, there's still quite a few people that sort of think of electric bikes as cheating, whereas if you actually ride one, you realise that there's still quite a lot of pedalling to be done, but it just flattens out the hills.
Absolutely. I mean, this, it's a long commute for an over 60-year-old. And the hills are brutal, like several bits over 15%. And I struggled in places. I never had to get off and walk, and I wouldn't have had to stop, but it was not an easy ride. But I think in turbo mode, it'll have the range to do the whole thing there and back with full beans up the hill. So.
And what is its range on this particular one?
Let's find out what the specs are. I remember we Googled it a while ago, but there it is. The Ribble Hybrid ALE. Ooh. It's 2,300 squiddly boys these days.
Relatively inexpensive. I've seen some electric bikes up to £10,000.
Yes, indeed. The full suspension, high-performance off-road stuff is where it really gets terrifying.
Yes. But even the ones that were moderately priced have seemed to have gone up by a good 30-odd%.
Indeed. So you know how they always give you the optimal spec? The optimal one is 60 miles.
Yeah, that seems quite average.
So it should be fine to get there and back on one charge, I reckon. And if it isn't, she's going to have panniers on it anyway, so just bring the charger with you. Charge it at the office.
Oh, so it has a separate charger that you need to plug it into. You can't just, I suppose you need something to convert the mains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of them will be like that. Well, I mean, some have removable batteries that you chuck into a thing.
Into a, yeah,
yeah,
a
this
pod.
One, yeah, this one you plug in.
Okay, well, they've all got to have a method of connecting to the mains.
Indeed. Right. Two more tales from my week. Firstly, I am two steps closer to the bike packing thing. I now am with tent, which is exciting. It's a nature hike affair. One person, but roomy enough to sit up in and not feel like you're in a coffin or something. I pitched it in the living room, obviously without being able to stake it to anything, fending off the cats while they were trying to attack the guy ropes. And not too bad a pitch. It was kind of fine. I think, so Nature Hike is a Chinese company that I think rips off Big Agnes, which is a really high-end, ultra-lightweight, super expensive brand from somewhere in the Americas, I think. But they do it in a relatively high-quality way. They seem to get good reviews online. So it's kind of a single sort of pole configuration in a Y shape. So it kind of, you have a flat front, which is your entrance, then it sort of tapers back towards the other end. But it's an inner with a mesh top that you kind of hook onto this pole Y-shaped configuration, then a rain fly over the top of that. And I didn't need to read the instructions. Hooray! And managed to pack it away again, which is the crucial bit that's often a pain. But I'm very pleased.
So have you got much more to go before you're fully equipped for adventures?
Ooh, the other half is I have my camping stove as well. That's ready to go. So I need a bigger dry bag so that I can have my sort of the full sleep situation, you know, tent, sleeping mat, sleeping bag and everything, just all in one lump. Dry lump on the front of the bike. So sleeping mat is another bit that I haven't got. I'm still waiting for that bike rack, but that's November in theory. I know it's on a boat somewhere from China, so we're getting there. And then I think that would kind of be it. There might be a couple of extra little nubbins, like a little Bic lighter, because I used matches testing out the stove, head torch maybe. That's kind of it. I'm nearly there. but I've missed another season. I don't think I'll do it this winter.
I was going to say that. I was going to assume that you don't need any of this stuff until at least spring.
No, I'm in no rush. I've definitely... I think if I had all of the bits, you know, this week, there might be some good weather, but I don't want to rush it and have a miserable cold one as my first go. What I will do is just take the stove, my AeroPress, and maybe bring coffee-making equipment on a bike ride, which would be quite fun.
Fair enough. But so sometime next year when the weather improves, you're going to be disappearing off into the countryside on your bike with your equipment strapped to yourself and the bike.
That is the plan, Stan. We'll see how it goes.
Mm.
Finally, board games. I don't think I've spoken about board games for a while. So my favourite being Scythe, which I have mentioned before, an alternative future post-World War One with mechs and steampunk things. In the board game world, much like there always used to be for games like Sims and SimCity, there are expansions, so you can add campaigns or new factions or other bits and pieces to your board gaming experience. And one frivolous upgrade to my copy of Scythe I picked up as a little birthday present to myself is a set of metal coins, because there's currency that you use in the game, and then it's just kind of punched out of cardboard, but it's metal. So when you're trading money in the game, you're actually handling cash, and I didn't realize how incredibly satisfying that would make the game when you're jingling coins in your hand. So do recommend, if you have a game with money involved, see if you can get a metal coin upgrade for it, because, man, what a feeling.
I hadn't mentioned that when I was in Chichester about 2 weeks ago, I came across a shop, and I believe it was called Comics, Games and Coffee.
I need to go.
And I believe it was CGC.
Let's have a look. Yeah, Comics, Games and Coffee, Chichester. Excellent.
And it was the first time I've ever seen a shop that was resplendent with loads of these very esoteric board games.
Yeah, another thing, like bikes, that has exploded because of lockdowns various. Obviously, people need new hobbies to pick up, and it's a great one.
Yeah, they weren't exactly packed out, but there was a lot of interesting things in the windows, especially as they had a lot of kind of, you know, the sort of film memorabilia, you know, sort of 1/6 scale models of whoever. You know, so the typical ones, you had the Star Wars figures and some Lord of the Rings stuff, but there was also some really strange other stuff like John Wick figures you know, anything that you could think of, basically. And they had sort of various different models and the like.
They're really enjoyable shops to browse if you are of the correct combination of nerdy persuasion. And been to quite a few board game cafes now as well. They're really good fun. Best if you can go when it's kind of quiet and the staff have enough time to teach you board games, because then it's easier to, you know, learn new games. Otherwise, you just feel, I don't want to spend, you know, an hour learning the game and then playing it. Board game cafes are great.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. We have news! Some pretty interesting bits of news, in fact, this week. Firstly, Moog, our friends from North Carolina. I say they're friends. They don't know who we are. I wish they did. Anyway, they have just unveiled something not very exciting, but quite cool, but so sort of exciting. Anyway, the previous only way of achieving such a thing as they have just released would be the STG Sound Labs Boat Rocker. And if you know what that is, you'll know. I've told you in a very roundabout fashion that Moog have powered cases now. Hooray! It's 104 HP in whatever the shorter one is. 60. There we go. So your little cases that your Mother 32 might have come in, that size, and now a long one, have power. With quite a few headers as well. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the little 60 HP one.
What's the intention for these? Is it that you put your Mother 32 or your whatever in there, and then you supplement it with other modules from other manufacturers?
So with the 60 HP one, that will certainly be, you know, they have, I think they call them the Sound Lab bundles with the racks.
Yes.
So if you only had Subharmonicon and DFAM, you could then use the 3-tier to have a modular section in there, and it all, you know, match up nicely. With the 104 HP case, I think that might be the one where, ooh, actually, chuck your Mother 32 in there and then have space for some more exciting stuff as well.
Yeah.
More exciting. That's very rude of me. I'm sorry. Mother 32s are nice.
Do we have any idea of what the cost will be? Because I can't imagine, as it being Moog, that they're going to be cheap at all.
No. Actually, what I'll do is see if I can resurrect my cost per HP spreadsheet and let you know how it stacks up, but those prices might not be accurate anymore. I won't do that. We've got 60 HP, $300.
Ouch.
Mm. And 104 HP, $349. So just get the 104 HP. There's absolutely no reason to get that.
Or just get the Behringer 104 HP and...
For what is it, like 50 quid or less?
Something like that. And then just put a...
Tip-top
audio Zeus bus power into it.
Easy.
Because that's what I did.
Mm. Yes, only if you're really married to that Moog tier situation. Although, to be fair, I guess it's kind of a different use case, but that add-in power supply to an old empty 60 HP case that STG Sound Labs make is really expensive. Yeah, it's $200 just for that little power supply to put into an empty case.
Mm.
Anyway, more options, kind of cool. And, I mean, they say, oh yes, sourced for optimum low noise and high performance. I don't really know how they'll stack up to some of the best of the best. Ooh, let me see if I can find the power specs on that. It's certainly not on the main webpage for them. That's quite easy to remember. On plus 12, minus 12, and plus 5, it is 1 amp, 1 amp, and another amp. Nice and easy. There's quite a lot of juice on the plus 5. You don't really see that much anymore. Not a lot of users it either.
Even to this day, that I have a single module that takes 5 volts.
In that huge old case.
Or any of the cases that I have.
Yeah.
And 1 amp isn't a lot, if you remember the problems I had with the Scarab.
True. It definitely will be enough for that 60 HP, but in the 104,
Yeah, imagine putting something like a Strymon.
Yeah, the Magneto or the other one. They really draw a lot. Yeah, the only thing that I've had with plus 5 was an old Pittsburgh mixer or an old Dopefer thing, maybe, and a USB power delivery thing, because USB power is 5 volts anyway, so it just...
Yes.
They're the easiest things to DIY ever, because you just grab some of those pins. Anyway, there we are. Those are the specs. Two quick ones. The Tip Top Audio Buchla 257T dual voltage processor is now available. Now, what does this one do? Because it's one of the ones that has incredibly frustrating labeling. So you have one knob labeled VAK, which, given its labeling, looks like an attenuverter. You then have VBM plus MVC. Yeah, no idea. And then plus VOffset equals VOut.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, neither do I. I mean, that's how it's labeled. It's just three knobs with nonsensical wording. But what you do have, I think, is attenuate, scale, offset functionality with a plus 5 volt switchy thing in it. Yeah. Either way, it looks suitably Buchla. And we like Tip Top, so that's cool. Other news, brief one from ADAC, who do high quality stuff. If you need balanced in and out on the form, not on the form, in the form of an XLR, you've got an in and an out. They are ADAC 710 and 711, if that's something that was on your radar. Slightly more interestingly, Modbap. What did Modbap do? What was their other thing? Are they the ones with that 8-voice Dubry?
Yeah, I believe that. Is this the drum voice thing that you can...
No, this is sort of a channel strip-ish.
Okay.
So, let me just find out who Modbap are. I keep forgetting.
For some reason, I thought they were the company that released... They had an oscillator, and then they released... They've got some other modules, and then at Knobcom, they were introducing this 3-voice digital drum voice thing. Mm. So, it had 4 different voices that you could select from, but 3 separate channels.
Trinity.
Yes.
That's them.
Yes. So, it is that company.
Yes, indeed. And they have Performer, with a number 4, which is 4 big old arcade buttons, a 2-channel stereo mixer, a bi-fidelity wavetable oscillator, and the new one called Hue, as in color hue kind of thing. And it's kind of a character module is what they call it. So you've got 4 knobs and a little trim, which is a filter, which will do low pass, high pass, a drive, a tape, and lo-fi. There is also a shift functionality, which gives you access to tone, intensity, and sample rate for the last 3. So it's something that you find kind of in the plugin world, and when using earlier digital synths, sometimes they're just a bit clean and boring. So if you want to spice them up, that's quite a nice one-stop shop. Is this 6 HP? I think it's 6. Is it 6?
I'm sure Dave Smith Instruments used to do a module called Character as well at one stage.
Mm.
I don't know if they even do those modules anymore. They've been retired.
Yeah, they definitely all got discontinued, but I think they did make one. Let's have a look. Yes, indeed. It was the DSM-02 Character module, which had girth, air, decimate, hack, and drive. Seems to be much the same thing as what this Hue is doing, which was from the Prophet 12. Apparently, but the Hue looks given the photos to be a Teensy-based digital system.
I'm quite interested in that Trinity they do.
Yeah, I don't think I actually listened to that one.
It's definitely, there is a Sonic State video for it, for Knobcom. And
ooh, that's a big boy. $549.
What, the Trinity?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but it packs a lot of punch. There's a lot going on there.
Certainly looks like it. And it, yeah, it's relatively distinctive with its pink and blue, but still restrained enough with the mostly black. Quite classy. So yes, if you need some juice to your clean, boring sounds, Hue by Modbap might be for you. Now, here's a weird one. We don't normally talk much about audio interfaces because they're really not very interesting. But, well, most of the time anyway, Lewitt, who, as far as I know, have only done mics so far, have an audio interface. The IO is boring until it isn't boring. It's just two in, two out, and there's a 3.5mm auxiliary thing. But it has a lot of DSP and cool routing stuff. So it actually has three USB-C connectors on the back. There's one labeled computer, power, and mobile. So one functionality is that you can just charge a phone from it, which I guess is cool. Or if it's just supplying power, you could plug in, you know, a MIDI controller that needed power, something like that. But it's also designed to integrate audio signals from iOS and Android devices and a computer in sort of a streaming capacity. It also has full access to all the channels and routing on the inside, which is notably missing from things like the small Scarlets. You can't do a whole lot with those. And it has zero latency effects, four-band EQ, compressor, expander, and maximizer. I think it's kind of niche-ish, but for the person that really needs that, I'm glad that exists.
And what sort of damage are we talking about for that one?
It is a chunk, €300.
It's not awful.
Yeah, it could be worse. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that would... I mean, because RME have really good mixing stuff, but you're going to be waiting until the, well, last I checked, £600 mark before you got to a baby face or something.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
And the UAD stuff has a mixer in it, but I mean, on their smaller interfaces, there's not much I.O. to mess with anyway. I think you can do a decent amount with the Arturia audio fuses. Either way, nice one, Lewitt. That's kind of cool. I'm not so sure about the styling. I don't know how to sum it up, but it's not quite right.
Oh no, what's going on there?
Yeah, it's really flat and sort of unnecessarily angular.
I thought that was the paint scheme. Is it as angular as it looks?
Oh yeah, no, that's molded, I assume, plastic. So it's kind of a bit Tron, but the original one, so not quite as sleek as it became.
Certainly distinctive.
Yeah. Oh, it's got a bit of Razer about it, you know, the kind of gaming peripherals.
I was going to say that. It looked
people.
Like a gaming peripheral type of object.
Well, certainly the black, white, and green is quite gamery. Still, an interesting feature set, so just to let you know it's there.
Maybe that's who they're aiming at.
Yeah, gamers and streamers. The streamers are mentioned in the bump. Okay. I'm going to do a cheeky pre-miscellaneous multimedia for this one, because there is a unit, a kind of nice looking desktop dual delay doodad by a company I'd never heard of, and they almost got their name correct. It is Vongon. If they'd taken an N out, it would have been a Vogon, which, as all Hitchhiker's Guide fans would know, is brilliant, as long as you're not using it to make any poetry. Anyway, this dual delay thing is called Polyphrase, and I mean, it's probably cool. I personally don't really care. What I do care about is the YouTube channel that it's on and made possibly the most wondrous demo I've ever seen. So, you know the YouTube channel Knobs? Do you know Knobs?
Mostly
guitar pedals.
Yeah, maybe. That's why I don't know them.
Got into modular sort of a couple of years into doing that, and probably spending too much time with Chase Bliss pedals and wanting the CV. Think pastel colours, really nice, delicate, ambient, clean guitar. Add some whimsy and high quality video production, and you'll get a Knobs video. I will show you one for reference, Pete. This was for the Chase Bliss Mood.
Okay.
This kind of thing. So, you take the Knobs formula, which they are really high quality demos, and there's no talking, it's just reading, so they're really peaceful in their way. But you go to this channel, Fire Ghosting, yeah, Fire Ghosting, all one word, add claymation and mushrooms, and you get this.
Okay.
there's obviously a significant amount of time spent on this, given all the individually animated clay mushrooms and strange mushroom people. But I think it's absolutely wonderful. Really is going the extra mile in terms of doing a demo of some musical product doing an entire Aardman animation around it. Yeah, if you go onto the channel, there's just a lot more. Brilliant. Fire ghosting. Final two bits. 1010 Music have hit it again with one of those little teeny tiny things like the Lemon Drop and Fireball little grooveboxy synthesizer machines. This one is called Razzmatazz, because of course it is, FM synthesis and sampling to complement the wavetable Fireball and granular of Lemon Drop. It's hot pink, if that's your thing. And yeah, certainly sounds grooveboxy, and it's there. I mean, they're fairly capable and well-regarded, these 1010 things, but let's see if this might be up your street. I believe you can sample into it as well as just import your own sample, so it is a very powerful, very small musical box. But.
Yes, but.
€459.
Ooh! Yeah, not necessarily that cheap for something that small.
Yeah, you're approaching kind of teenage engineering price density combos. See, how much is the OPZ these days?
It's still up there.
Oh, it's, yeah, €452. Ooh, that is an interesting kind of trade-off. Comparison. Razzmatazz or OPZ. Well, certainly having a clear touchscreen makes navigation easier in a lot of senses, but you can now reliably pair your phone with the app to the OPZ if you want that.
Yeah, but I much prefer the self-contained units.
Certainly.
I think I would opt for the 1010 Music option.
I think that's the right way to go, unless you wanted the CV or MIDI in and out that you can add to the OPZ.
And this has none of that.
I believe it's just audio, I/O, and power. I think that's all you get with the little bad boy. Let me just double check that. I don't want to be talking out my bum. No, you do have MIDI I/O.
Yeah, I would imagine, because you'd want to sequence it or sync it with some of the other modules.
Yeah, and you can do CC control from a surface if you want. So yes, only if you really want two CV and gate pairs on something like that, and a built-in microphone, and an accelerometer if you wanted that for some reason.
And the compatibility with Lego.
Yeah, if you cared. I forgot that was a thing. Yep, there we go. That's the comparison done. Yeah, it swings towards the 1010 quite heavily, I think. Anyway, there it is. 1010 Music with more teeny tiny sound creation machines. I don't know anybody that's had one of these yet.
No, we were, or one of my colleagues was looking to see if we would look to stock those products, but I don't know how far he got with that, as we don't have a relationship with 1010 Music or their...
whoever might distribute their stuff.
Yeah, their UK authorised distributor, if there is one.
Finally, a thing that isn't synths. I came across an article on one of the websites that I... Well, it's kind of a bit of a blog-type situation. This applies to both our histories and situations with synthesizers and music gear, but it's on the Casual Photo File, which is a film camera website thing. But the title is, "It's Okay to Like Cameras More Than You Like Photography." Ah, do you see where this is going, Pete?
Yes, I definitely do.
I'm going to grab some quotes from this article, but I do urge you to read it because the parallels are obvious and everywhere.
And it's somewhat similar to the sentiments that were expressed in last week's conversation regarding that thread that you were reading.
The namelessness one.
Yes.
Yeah. The tension between craft and collecting is most apparent in the wider online world, on places like Instagram and YouTube, where it's easy to stumble into arguments between those who identify as photocentric and those who identify as camera-centric.
And we already know there's a lot of gas in the camera world.
Oh, big time. Yeah, and in the article that he draws parallels. This is an article by James Tocchio, by the way. He draws parallels between the sort of film camera Leica obsessives and high-end luxury watch people.
Okay.
Though the size of the market is considerably different. So, one more quote. To start, let me state my position. I like cameras more than I like photos. I can hear the collective gasp. But I'm not alone. Plenty of my readers simply love playing with cameras. We love the feel of them, the noises they make, the history of the machines and the people who made them. We stare into the crystal depths of the 55mm f1.2 Nikkor, lost in the dusty innards of the optical assembly, which we know, because we care about things like that, is a double Gauss design comprised of 7 elements in 5 groups. But yeah, it's cameras, but I feel it. I feel it in the synth world.
I would imagine it's in lots of areas, especially if it's a technology hardware-based interest. So I would imagine you can get gas in any field.
Yeah.
I mean, another example would be the tool world.
Definitely.
The sort of enthusiastic hobbyist who has a workshop and somewhat like myself, which filled with wonderful devices.
Yeah.
To the point where it's so crowded I can't use any of them.
But yes, I'd encourage our listeners to read this article and just come away with it's okay to like the gear more than you like the activity.
Yeah, it's certainly something I've been considering in respect to my, I don't want to say sickness, but my affliction for buying synths. As we said before, it doesn't aid productivity or make you a better musician or a better producer if you have lots of equipment. Just means you've got a lot of equipment.
Yeah, and there is something satisfying in less just using the things, even just wiring them all up so that they would work together.
Yeah.
Because that's just a pleasing problem-solving, efficiency-creating feeling.
Ironically, I get a lot of joy with just contemplating knowing what I could do with it if I was so inspired. It's like I've got all the...
You have the power.
I have all the functionality and all the sounds and all the equipment I could have ever dreamt of having. And that's all I do is dream of using it. And it seems to be enough some of the time, which is a bit strange.
I think it's all right.
It's okay. It's okay.
A nice comforting podcast for you.
I don't need therapy then.
It's okay. You can like your gear. Right. You know what that means? The time has come at last for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I'm going to give you a quick blast of the one that I've found for this week. It is Red Means Recording. We've definitely mentioned him before, but more specifically, it's a video, a live set that he played for the New York Modular Society in March 2021. Here is a very quick blast, because don't listen to it on here. You need to go and find it on YouTube. It's really slick, has great transitions, multiple sections, and just oozes competence. And yeah, it's wonderful. That particular section I quite like features the WMD Architect with that kind of lead melody, and it really, yeah, it does things. So the video is called New York Modular Society Full Performance March 2021 on Red Means Recording's YouTube channel. Go find it. Pete, what have you found for us?
Right, this is a YouTube channel that I came across last week, and it is quite bizarre in some respects. It's got a touch of AMSR about it, or you could certainly utilize it in that respect, I would imagine. What it is a kind of ear training. Well, in fact, all the videos, from what I can see, are ear training. Some of them are longer than the others. Some of the first ones that were done were 8 hours long.
Oh my. Is this the perfect pitch kind of ear training?
It's that sort of thing, but it's training you to recognize various divisions.
Oh, for drummers, the equivalent of perfect pitch then?
No,
perfect
no. Time. Divisions between semitones.
Ah.
So, so the first lot of videos, which only started about a year ago, a number of them are all 8 hour ones. And they're described as passive ear training, and then this one I'm reading is minus second interval ascending, 8 hours of it.
Oof.
And goes on so forth like that. And then there's a series of 30-minute ones, which is relaxing sounds, minus seventh intervals, 30 minutes of those. And then there's some more slightly shorter ones, but it's all of that ilk. So there'll be a sort of two notes sounded,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to decide what type of interval it is, think about it, and then a very soothing voice tells you what the interval is,
yeah.
and then it plays another one and tells you, and it just goes on like that. The actual channel is called Once a Paw in Time. Paw as in cat's paw.
Ah, interesting.
And the logo is a cat with a pair of headphones on.
That's fun.
And that is my multimedia recommendation for this week. The YouTube channel Once a Paw in Time.
There we go. That is certainly an interesting one. Maybe you can be a bit more productive when you're in the bath instead of listening to an audiobook. Do some ear training. Wonderful. Excellent. Audience, wonderful people out there somewhere in the internet, thank you for tuning in as always, and we hope you come back soon. Farewell!